Hello and welcome to the I Wanna Be A Band podcast, a podcast series where I chat to good friends about the music I'm passionate about. My name is Oliver Palmer. I created this podcast for two reasons, my love of music and, like most people in the world, I'm bored, being strongly advised not to leave my house in the midst of the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic. Music is a universal language, transcending cultures, generations and other human differences. But it's also a deeply personal one, with every single one of us on varying musical paths. Through chats with close friends and family, this podcast looks to explore just that. The Beatles versus the Rolling Stones. The debate has been going on for nearly 60 years, both emerging around the same time in the early 1960s and going on to shape music, clothes and politics. They were naturally pitted against each other. To this day, they're still listened to all over the globe, and are both seen as blueprints for rock and roll bands, influencing pretty much all popular music since. My relationship with both bands has been a close one. Even last year, my Spotify top 5 artists, they sat at number 1 and 2 respectively, with the Stones just taking the top spot. My favourite of the two alternates, which, in my opinion, is testament to the greatness of them. Discovering both at around 14 years of age, they have been with me for over half my life. The influence, the myths, the legends and stories surrounding the bands has been an obsession of mine ever since. In this episode, I chat to a good friend of mine, Adam, although I call him Blackwood for reasons I cannot quite remember. We first met at uni nearly 10 years ago and immediately bonded over music. The Faces, Led Zeppelin, Stone Roses were all staples. We remain good friends ever since and constantly talk about music of all genres. This episode is an attempt to bottle up a small snippet of those conversations. I thought we would frame it under the lens of Beatles versus Rolling Stones, but in reality, we are massive fans of both. Touching on topics such as their best album run and coolest members. This episode does contain some bad language, so if your gran is round, perhaps turn it down. I hope you enjoy. Okay, hello and welcome to episode 1 of the I Wanna Be Your Band podcast, name pending. I'm joined today by a very special guest, Blackwood. How are you?
I'm good, thank you, mate. How are you?
Very, very well, thank you, very well. Okay.
After a great start.
I think on this podcast, we could take on the eternal debate of the Beatles versus the Stones. So before we start, are you a fan of both?
Yes, very much. Love both.
Good, good. But if push came, if push came to shove, if you could only listen to one for the rest of your life, would you probably pick the Stones?
Yeah. If you had to put a gun to my head, I listen to the Stones, I would say. Way more often. But I'm a massive fan of both.
Okay, cool. So if push came to shove, I'd probably pick the Beatles as well. So I thought we could do just a friendly sort of Beatles versus Stones, talking about our personal relationships with both bands. I've got a few questions to kind of keep us on track, but feel free to ramble as much as you want, and I'm sure we'll go down different tangents. Does that all sound all right?
Yep. Sounds
cool.
Yep, sounds good, man.
Okay, so the first question I have, do you first remember when you heard the Rolling Stones?
No. Because I guess kind of like the Beatles as well, it's like they've always been around. Like, I definitely couldn't pinpoint like the first time I like listened, or the first time I heard them, but the first time I sort of got into them, I think I was about 17, and there was a kid a year younger than me in school, cool kid, lost his virginity in a H&M changing rooms, shout out.
Nice. Potential sponsors, H&M.
Yeah, H&M, get in touch. So he was telling me about Exile on Main Street and gave me sort of a brief rundown of just that it was recorded in, like at the time I didn't know much, so I was just like aware that it was recorded in one of their mansions and that they were kind of in trouble at the time, and he was just like, listen to this album, which I guess is kind of weird because we've spoken about that before, in that it's kind of one of their more inaccessible albums in a way,
like very much got... I think they only had 2 singles from that album, and it's certainly not got sort of the big hits on there really. If you think of the big singles, you don't really think of Exile at all. So that's quite interesting, actually.
Yeah, and I think, weirdly, one of the singles from that is Happy, which is Keith Richards singing, which is also kind of bizarre. So, yeah, it's a not a very typical album, but I think... So, like I said, this kid was, he was a cool kid, and he was already very into the whole mythos of, like, the Stones. So, you know, I think once you get into it, Exile's put on kind of a pinnacle. So he led with that. At this point, I had a handle on all the songs that I knew Jumpin' Jack Flash and Brown Sugar and yeah. Michelle. Like, I knew all those and liked them, but I'd be lying if I said I was I was regularly listening to them. And then post listening to Exile, like, I immediately, just from Rocks Off, immediately I was just like, fuck, this is awesome. Like, it was just so cool.
So it's kind of the same with me. And
then A Love Affair started. Sorry, go.
Yeah, so it's kind of the same with me with the Stones. I don't remember a distinct moment when I first heard them. I think it was Sympathy for the Devil that kind of brought me in. I think it was on some sort of playlist, some sort of Rolling Stone, the magazine playlist. And I kind of listened to it and I thought, okay, this is actually really interesting. This is not what any of my friends are listening to or anything. This is kind of something that I can own myself. But my experience with the Beatles is actually very distinct. It's a very distinct moment that I remember first hearing them. So I was on a family holiday, I think in like Canada somewhere. And obviously Canada's massive, so you've got to drive everywhere. So we spent a lot of time listening to like the local radio stations there.
Sure. And how old were you at this point? Sorry.
I think about like 13, 14, kind of the prime age to get into music.
Yeah.
And the local radio stations were rubbish, basically. They're so bad. So we went to Walmart and bought like a few CDs. And this was sort of the mid-noughties, really, like 2006, I suppose it was. So this is kind of when indie rock was taking off, like Arctic Monkeys, Franz Ferdinand. So I think we bought a couple of those. And we also bought the Beatles' Love album, which is a weird one. It's sort of a compilation album that I think they did for their Cirque du Soleil show in Vegas. And it sort of incorporates like 70 Beatles songs into 30 Beatles songs. It's quite interesting. It's worth a listen to. It's sort of like a remix album, I suppose. Mm-hmm. And the song came on. It was Here Comes the Sun. And it just like hit me like an absolute lightning bolt. I remember thinking like, this is absolutely fantastic. Like the melody of it, the guitar in it, even like the drums in it. I thought it sounded so crisp. All my friends were kind of at the time into kind of like Blink 182, into Shikari, like that sort of music. And it just never clicked for me. And I kind of pretended to like it just to fit in. But then I kind of heard this and I thought, okay, this is phenomenal. So I went back, listened to from Please Please Me right through to Let It Be as soon as I got home, and delving into each album and sort of the stories and the myths behind each album as well, and how it takes you on this crazy journey. They're only together for 10, making music for under 10 years. Crazy journey. It's so varied as well.
Yeah, and prolific, because like every year there was something coming out. And see, that's interesting as well, because as much as I say I like the Beatles, I've not done that. I've not gone like album by album and done like I've not sunk into it nearly as much as you have. But kind of like, so that's interesting in as much as, you say it's weird to get into Exile for the Stones. Interesting that Here Comes the Sun is your first song, because that's a Harrison song. And obviously Beatles are largely
Lennon, McCartney
and Lennon.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah.
What a song that is. Written in Clapton's garden, I think, wasn't it?
Something I think like it was, that. Yeah, yeah. It doesn't get much better than that, really. If I had to push you for a favourite Rolling Stones song, and feel free to mention a few, but if you had to pick one, what would you pick?
It's tough. So, Exile is still my favourite album. I think just probably sentimentally as well, because obviously, 17, 18, that's time that you remember a lot in your life anyway, which is weird, because to say that a band that you're really identifying with is like 50 years prior to that, it's always a kind of a tussle up between Dancing in the Light which usually kind of takes the top spot. If like if I would have to strip it down, I'd say Dancing in the Light, but then honorable mentions: Plunder My Soul, Ventilator Blues, Following the River. You know, the album is just, it's just brilliant. But then I'd also say, and almost, and obviously not off Exile, but Tussling for top spot, and a much more recognizable song is Gimme Shelter. I love that. It's it's kind of spooky sounding, and just the guitar, and it, like, obviously open E for the guitar nerds that might be listening to this, and I guess we're going to get into Keith Richards and open tuning in a bit, but it just sounds so spooky. And I know you know her name, the lady who does the backing
song. Mary Clayton does the duet with Jagger on that. Just an absolute haunting voice, I think, on that song. A lot of when they do it live, they've done it live with lots of, they sort of collaborate with a lot of artists, but I don't think anything's quite touched that original voice on that record.
Well, that's kind of the thing, is that one, like, you hear that, but apparently she was, like, it was like 3 a.m. or something, and they came up with the lyrics "rape, murder," and they got her out of bed. She was, I think, 6 or 7 months pregnant. She had her hair in curlers, and they get her out of bed, and they're like, "We've got these lyrics that we need you to sing over and over again." And apparently there was a bit of like, "Why am I just repeating rape, murder over again?" And then I think, you know, when they sort of explain and play the song, she got it and whatever, but it's like 3 a.m. So even when you hear that and you hear it, and then I think on like the third go around of it, her voice cracks, but it cracks in tune, or in pitch, or and it's amazing, and it makes the song sound so much more like haunting and all of that. And you can hear in the background when it cracks, you can hear Jagger give a woo, like, because it sounds fucking great, like it sounds so cool. And I also think it's a really one of their really great live songs. Those would be mine. But what about you, Beatles wise? I mean, this is going to be tough.
So it was tough. There's one that's kind of been kind of my favorite for a while now. Probably A Day in the Life, which closes Sergeant Pepper.
That's a very interesting one.
So it's kind of, I think lyrically, I really like it. Again, the atmosphere, we kind of spoke of Give Me a Shelter, but the atmosphere of the song, I think, is great in it. It's also kind of, it's kind of two songs in one. You've got the Side of Lennon, which is very dark, that dark, slow melody, and then you've got that Paul comes in with that very upbeat, happy, you know, woke up, climbed out of bed little segment, which I think is great as well. I think the orchestra is really good in it as well as kind of the ending E chord, I think, is absolutely fascinating, really.
You say it's two songs, I feel like it's like eight songs. It's like that, it's a lot. There's that bit where it's like, kind of reminds me of Willy Wonka, where they're going down in the boat, you know, there is no way, and then it just starts going mental. It's like, it comes out of nowhere, those bits as well.
I've got some honorable mentions for me. Probably It's All Too Much, actually. I quite like that off the Yellow Submarine. That's quite an underrated Beatles tune, I think. Got to Get You Into My Life and Tomorrow Never Knows, I think, from Revolver, are both fantastic. I quite like Ticket to Ride, I wrote down here as well. I think that's just a really greatly written pop song. I'd probably pick those. I think Ticket to Ride is kind of the end of the beginning, I always see it as, with the Beatles. That's before they were kind of still, you know, the mop top, wearing the same kind of very clothes, poppy. Very poppy. And then I think Ticket to Ride is quite psychedelic in like the guitar line. It sounds a bit like the Birds, that kind of California rock kind of music. And I think that's kind of, you know, the end of the beginning of the beat. And then from then, that's on the Help album. Then you've got Rubber Soul, when they started getting into drugs and more psychedelic, more darker themes. So I think that's that's probably why I'd pick that.
What about Stones though? Did we do your Stones?
Doing a bit of research for this, so I picked Gimme Shelter, definitely.
Oh, okay.
I also quite like Monkey Man off of I think Let It Bleed.
Yeah, it's the last song, I think.
Yeah.
Or the last but one, something like that. Yeah, but yeah, that's so good.
It's got a great intro to that. Such a good intro. Yeah. I think the Stones are, in terms of like intros to songs, I don't think anyone can touch them really.
Yeah, I love the intro to Can't You Hear Me Knocking?
Yeah.
Just that, like, just the variant of that riff, just sort of repeated over and over again until you get into the main, like, just that, da-na-na-na, and then obviously Charlie just driving it, that dun, dun, so good. It's, yeah, that intro is amazing.
I think that kind of sums them up quite nicely, is that they are not necessarily just an intros band, but they put so much importance into that. They drag you in straight away. Within the first 10 seconds, you're like, okay, this is, I'm with you on this journey, on this 4-minute rock and roll song or whatever. I think that kind of sums them up quite nicely.
Well, so I've kind of recently started learning a bit more about that Ian Stewart guy, or Stu, I think they used to call him, that Scottish, their piano player.
Yeah.
Who, like, was too, like, fucking ugly to be in the band, like, as a main guy. So, but apparently he played, like, well, you can hear it, because he was their, like, their piano player right through to, until he died, I think. And, like, on some of their biggest tunes with, like Sympathy for the Devil, I think, is Stu. And like, anything that with piano in this got, like, a real, like, damn, like, it does make it so dancey. That's one of the things as well, is that, like, so much of it, you just even, I mean, it's just, like, you can't help but, like, move to it. It's got a rhythm. So, like, and that's something they do really well as well. Like,
yeah,
both bands, like Beatles and the Stones.
Yeah. So I think we move on to the best album run. So best consecutive albums. Have you got a Stones best consecutive albums?
Well, yeah, I've got the very cliched Beggar's Banquet, Let It Bleed, Sticky Fingers, Exile run, but then followed up by Goat's Head Soup, which I know we've discussed as well as kind of a, like, maybe, like, also can fit under an underrated album as well, but I rate it. I think it's a very great album.
I definitely include it. I think, to be honest, the first, because they had that reissue, didn't they, last year in 2020, and
it was that
reissue that kind of really got me back into it, because they released three new songs, the one with Jimmy Page, which was great, Scarlet, but it's kind of those three songs that kind of got me back into it. It was kind of always an album that I sort of skipped in the Stones discography in a way, but it's actually really, really good. I think it's the last one with Mick Taylor as well, which is kind of showing, because with all respect, I think they kind of went a little bit on a bad album run after that.
Look, full disclosure, I don't really give too much of it that much of my notice after that, to be honest. I haven't gone, like, yeah, I don't like Dirty Work and Some Girls and stuff. I'd be lying if I said I was an authority, like, not an authority on anything we're talking about now, but I'd be lying if I said I knew anything really to say, or anything meaningful to say about those albums at all.
So
I agree. I do think that's kind of, and I you know, I don't think that we're I don't think that's a novel opinion that we've just cracked. I think that's kind of widely.
I think there's a couple of sort of singles. I think Start Me Up was sort of a late Stones tune that's still a great song, and it's still kind of a staple of their live shows. But
Some,
I think,
Girls is good live, that version they did.
I don't mind that album, Some Girls, actually. I think it's got some good songs on it. It's certainly not fantastic, but I don't mind it too badly.
That sort of upbeat live version they do of it is brilliant.
Yeah, yeah.
That's an interesting thing to actually kind of, there's so much live stuff of the Stones that you can reference, whereas the Beatles kind of live stuff is, you know, it's there, like, that's, you know, there's what we've got, and it's not that much.
No, not at all. So they only really played live for like 5 years, perhaps. I mean, if you kind of exclude when they win the Cavern Club as 17-year-olds, they stopped playing live. I think they played Rubber Soul, a few tracks from that live, but that's kind of it, really. And then they kind of packed it in and then started making Revolver, Sgt. Pepper, etc. So as a live band, the Beatles, I mean, I don't think you can really compare them. The Stones are still going. They've got their 60th anniversary next year remaining. They can all stay alive. But yeah, you can't really compare them as a live act, which kind of, again, kind of sums them up quite nicely. The Stones are more on the stage than necessarily in the studio.
Well, so many of their songs sound different, like totally different almost on stage to studio. And, you know, they were always kind of changed. That's, I mean, Midnight Rambler, that is in the Yaya's version. So is it Madison Square Garden 69?
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
That is live performances go. It's just like just listening to, like, you don't even need to like see footage of it. They just listening to it, you get such a like you feel the energy there. It's amazing. It's so good.
Yeah. Yeah, that's something that Keith Richards obviously really, really tackles head on. He says that the live is kind of where the Stones are best, really. And that's when he said he gets to know a song properly after playing it live, and it kind of takes on different forms, which I think is interesting. Yeah. Different attacks on it.
And what is good about their approach is that their whole thing is playing with the rhythm and being offbeat and you know, like working around the rhythm. Like, you know, it can always sound different and fresh because it's built into it to always kind of sound not jam bandy, but definitely like sort of almost thrown together.
but always
super tight.
Yeah. Okay, so if I had to pick the best album run from the Beatles, how does this sound? I've gone for Rubber Soul, Revolver, Sgt. Pepper, Magical Mystery Tour, I'm including in there as well. But I don't know if I'm just including that so I can get to the White Album as well, which is kind of at the end of that. Magical Mystery Tour is a good album, I think. I don't know if it technically counts as like a... It didn't have a massive release. It was kind of the soundtrack to their film of the same name.
Yeah, I think there's an argument that you are using it as a stopgap to the White Album.
But... Yeah, I think so. I don't think it's a very cohesive album, Magical Mystery Tour. I think it's got good individual songs on it, but I think compared to sort of Rubber Soul, Revolver, Sgt. Pepper, I think they completely transformed music in the 60s and completely transformed music since that, really. And like I said, they kind of packed up their live shows, I think, around sort of the Rubber Soul time, and then just went on this crazy exploratory journey in the studio. Started exploring different themes and started making real experimental, quite psychedelic music, really.
I think, and again, one of the huge differences in that, you know, the Stones and the Beatles, I think, is that, like, and I think you mentioned it, you know, the Stones are not really known for experimenting too much, but, like, you know, but that was the Beatles' sweet spot was messing with sound and like panning sound around and just anything to make songs different and like key changes. And I forget where I sort of read this or saw this or whatever, but just that, you know, I think they had a basic understanding of sort of music theory early on, but nothing, but a basic and which grew over time.
Yeah.
But I think they always kind of had an interest of the things that were outside of their grasp. And like, they were interested in key changes and made there's snippets of interviews from that time where they talk about things like that, but without really knowing how to properly phrase it. Mm-hmm. But it shows that they're all kind of, that is what they're interested in, you know, is that the just messing around with things and seeing like how to dismantle it and put it back together in a slightly different way.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I think we touched on this slightly earlier, but if I was to pick you for the best album from that run, would it be Exile on Main Street? Is that what you're going for?
Yeah. It would for me. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's fair enough. I think that's probably my favourite. I think it's like, if you're really, really into the Rolling Stones, that is the album that you pick. I would also kind of, I'm going to sort of bat for Sticky Fingers a little bit here. I think there's 11 songs in that. I think that's as good as rock albums ever get, really. Something like Sticky Fingers.
That's interesting. My sort of sub one after that is Let It Bleed.
So Let It Bleed was 1969. So that's kind of, so you got Beggar's Banquet, which is kind of a quite an acoustic-y album, I think, Beggar's Banquet. And then Let It Bleed, So it opens with Gimme Shelter. You've also got Midnight Rambler on there, Monkey Man, You Can't Always Get What You Want. Like, absolutely fantastic songs.
To open with Gimme Shelter and close with You Can't Always Get What You Want, like, to have that as a... Do you know what I mean? Like, people that don't know the Stones know that song. People, you know, that those are so well known that people don't even know that those are Stones songs because they're just part of the, you know... But people know those songs. And yeah, Monkey Man, which I think you mentioned earlier. Let It Bleed, which is great. And I got to be honest, the first took me a while, but Country Honk, I really wrote.
Yeah, I quite like that. That's well, actually.
The precursor to Honky Tonk Woman.
Yeah.
I do get that it's, you know, it can be a bit like jarring, I think, to, but yeah.
Do you mean Jagger singing in that very American voice?
Yeah, and it's just, and it's just, it's so overtly country.
Yeah. They definitely like country music. Like, I think Dead Flowers is one of my number one favorite Stones song, maybe.
Interesting.
Would be, well, it is recently anyway. I think it's absolutely fantastic. But that's like a pure country song as well. I think it's on the Sticky Fingers, Dead Flowers. Great live as well. It's a really good live rendition of, I think, in Texas in like 1972, I think. That's absolutely, it comes alive when it's like on the stage, I think, that song. So I've
picked... And I'm also looking now, I was just going to suggest...
No, go for it.
I was just going to, as one last honourable mention, we were talking about the live versions of this song sounding a lot different and being like, Live With Me. Like, it's like a great studio track, but if you hear it live, it's such a better live song. And it's like, that's what I mean, like these songs, that's how they're really kind of intended to be heard.
Yeah. Here's an interesting question for you. Had the Beatles had continued live, so you've got, you know, the Sgt. Pepper, White Albums, the Abbey Roads, had they were touring as normal, how do you think people would have perceived those live shows, and how do you think people would have perceived the Beatles in general had they played live? It's not something I've really thought about, but I think it's quite an interesting question.
Well, it's hard to tell, because in what do you mean? As in they carry on performing live and they've still got it? Does it get sad after a while?
Because they stopped playing live around 1965, I think. Like, say they had played live, like they continued to play live until 1970 when they broke up. So something like Sgt. Pepper, they never played live. But say they did play that live, I don't know how it would necessarily be. I don't know if they would be as revered necessarily. They were never a live band, really. Perhaps in the early days when they were just doing simple rock and roll covers, but they gave it up for a reason, because they couldn't hear themselves, basically, because of all the screaming girls.
I get that, but then, you know, they kind of, one of the last hoorahs, or almost the last hoorah, was their rooftop live performance, and that's brilliant. That's so tight. Like, and I mean, you know, they're pretty much all just simple, like, rock and roll tunes.
Yeah.
But they've done as good as they can be done. You're not going to get, the Get Back is, it's just like, you know, that's such an iconic performance. And,
Because I think when when they went to Let It Be, that album was, they did want to just return straight to their roots. They're just simple rock and roll songs. And they, in a way, were kind of made for that live show. I don't know if you could necessarily have done something like Sgt. Pepper on the stage, because of the studio was so important in bringing those songs and how they sound. I don't know if you could necessarily have done it, very well, anyway.
Well, that's a good point as well. I mean, we say that, we talk about that they say they couldn't, they didn't want to perform because they couldn't hear themselves, but, you know, but they just... Just took so much acid that they eventually woke up and played back the song that they just recorded. They were like, well, there's no fucking way we're going to be able to do this live. So yeah, we're just like, we're not doing live no more.
Yeah, fair enough. So my next question is, the most underrated album that you would pick for the Stones?
Well, I think we kind of touched on it in Goat's Head Soup. I'm not sure fully how sort of underwhelming it is considered, but I have seen things that people say they don't really put it up there as a, but yeah, I think it's great. I think it's got a lot of worthy mentions on there. None of which are coming to my mind right now, but I'm going to type in.
Maybe there's a reason for that. Yeah, it's, I think Dancing with
Mr. D. I don't know what you're alluding to. Yeah,
Dancing with Mr. D is a great song.
That, and dude, that is, yeah, that's superb. Do 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 Heartbreaker. Oh, obviously, Angie is on that. Now, I don't love Angie as a song. Like,
me neither.
It's, and I know that it's like one of the sort of, you know, lots of people like that one, but I don't love it necessarily. And I think even Keith himself has said that that's one of his favourites. But yeah, he's also said Ed Sheeran is good. So. Star Star is really good.
Yeah, that's a great song.
Yeah, I mean, that is just such a ruthless, rude, just balls to the wall, in your face, like dirty. It's great. It's just a good time. And
yeah,
like Chuck, just a Chuck Berry rocker. You know, they didn't do anything clever with that, but it's just, it's just a fun, fun song.
Yeah, just a fun song.
Yeah, brilliant. So yeah, that I would say underrated. But again, like I say, I'm not, I might be speaking a little bit out of turn in calling that underrated, but yeah, that's what I would do. That was what I'm putting forward.
Yeah, that's fair enough. I think I'd agree with you.
What about you, Beatles-wise, what are you saying?
So I'd probably pick Help. Maybe A Hard Day's Night, actually. That's got some great songs on it. Just like very simple 3-minute pop songs. But I'll go for A Hard Day's Night. I think that's what sort of Lennon and McCartney started properly writing together. I think it's majority like original Lennon McCartney songs. I think that's really started when the partnership really started to kind of get some momentum, really. And yeah, like I think the melodies on that are fantastic. I think if any modern band wrote those kind of melodies, I think they would be huge, really. And that's just sort of one album that's not really considered even in their top 8 albums or whatever. But yeah, I'd probably pick A Hard Day's Night, actually. Maybe Help. Just a little honourable mention to Help.
Help's a great song. Help's a great song.
Yeah, it is a great song. It's quite a dark song, actually.
I really do. Just as in, so when you said, you know, when you, from your Canada story, you just started from Please Please Me and got and went right through. Please Please Me is not a sleeper. That's a great album to start with. Like, I saw her standing there. If that's the first thing that you listen to get into the Beatles, you might have heard a lot of songs that sound that sort of rocker sort of, but it's not going to sound any blood is as good as it's ever going to, like, it's so good. And that's one of their first offer. It's brilliant. And that's like, and it's got, you can hear the, it does have the sort of like, you know, sort of garage band, like pasted together band that have got, you know, like it's still like they've got some work to do. It's brilliant. And that's what I wanted to say as well. I remember Jagger actually saying when he first heard about the Beatles, and he was a bit like, oh no, there's these boys that have heard of the blues and they're trying to play that music too, sort of thing. And he heard the blues harmonica on Love Me Do. And he said he said it made him feel sick with worry because he was like, oh, someone's beat us to it, sort of thing. But that's what I mean. Like, those are not sleeper songs. They're all great songs. And for a first album, like, you know, I'd put that up there for my underrated Beatles.
Yeah, okay, that's fair enough. I like that a lot, actually. So I thought we'd go on to the coolest member from your band.
Come on.
Now, come on. I sort of written down here. So I think we both agree, and we've both spoke extensively about how Keith Richards is sort of the coolest man I think to ever live.
He's still cool,
even though I think he must be nearly 80, right?
I think mid 70s.
Yeah. So I've got a quote here.
Insides is the insides of a mummy by now. So yeah.
So I've got a quote here that I think summarizes him quite well. if you're going to kick authority in the teeth, you might as well use 2 feet. And I think that kind of sums him up really quite nicely. This guy's like an absolute quote machine. But when I was going through them, trying to sum him up, I could have written down about 10 different quotes, I think. But kind of what does Keith Richards mean to you, and why is he the coolest member of the Rolling Stones / the world?
So I think, but when I was talking to my friend, I don't want to say his name because I shared an embarrassing story about his deflowering.
Call him Bob, unless his name's actually Bob.
I'll call him King. So when King was... shout out HM. Hit us up. We were talking about, because I know you know this, but just for the sake, I play guitar. So I got into them very, like, the whole thing that I like and sort of what draws me to them is the fact that it's guitar. But, you know, I'm listening to the guitar, and the fact that he's, you know, he plays with different tunings, like he's, like, talk about quote machine. He's famous for obviously using a 5-string open G, and, you know, 5 strings, 3 chords, 2 hands, 1 arsehole. You know, that's famous Keith Richards. I mean, talk about quote machine. Physically, he doesn't even just, like, he has physical, like, he's known for knocking his head, his heart, and his balls twice. Like, that. He has physical memes and, like, quotes, you know, for lack of a better word. Do you know what I mean? He's a myth, but a living myth. That's the thing about it.
I think the thing for me is that he's never tried to be cool. I don't think he's ever really put effort into being cool. He just is cool. You don't think you can really say the same about Mick Jagger at all?
No, he's diva through and through. I think,
yeah.
Well, whereas Keith Richards is almost the prototype for that, like, wasted rock. Like, I think, you know, he was also referred to as the most elegantly wasted man on the planet. Which is obviously kind of funny media spin, because, like, you just know that the life he was living, you know for a fact that there were times where he woke up just looking like dead, like covered in his own vomit and shit, and also, like, so there's no way that he always looked so fucking pretty while he was coming down on heroin, but he always definitely presented that, and he definitely got away with it, and so he was kind of the prototype for that. And whereas I think Jagger's almost the prototype for the diva. Doesn't Keith calls him Her Majesty?
Yeah, and I think, like, something, I know that Keith had a big issue about Mick Jagger accepting the knighthood as well.
Yeah.
Where the Stones are very anti-establishment, accepting a knighthood is very much accepting of the establishment.
And he said, I wouldn't let anyone from that family around me with a pointy stick.
But also, like, sort of, if you rate him purely on his guitar playing, this guy's like an absolute riff machine. Like, the riffs that he comes out with are just absolutely phenomenal. I'd say he's not technically the best guitarist at all.
Far from.
But in terms of riffs and feel, and I think he's phenomenal.
His understanding of rhythm he's not the fastest guy, and that's not what he's, you know, he's never tried to be that. You know, like you said, 3 chords, you know, that's pretty much what he works with. That's pretty much all of the songs are within a certain framework, like, you can figure them out, but you can't, like, it's what he can do with that, and it's all about the rhythm and the feel and like the open, like, I guess we can mention it now, like the open tunings, because we've mentioned it, that, you know, those are typically used for slide guitar, but he didn't use it, you know, he's using it for rhythm and figuring out how to put different sort of inflections on the chord, and yeah, so it's, you know, it's super impressive, like, I think what he's doing, and like you say, the riffs, it's so, because the key to a good riff is just simple, and it's just, you know, bam, ba, ba, da, ba, 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 da, da, ba, ba, da, da. It's just so simple, and
that was something that you can hum along to is the key to a good riff, really.
Apparently, that was supposed to be horns for "I Can't Get No Satisfaction," and
oh, really?
Yeah, he, I think he, something like maybe just woke up from like a drunken stupor and either like hummed the melody into a tape or something, but then eventually got to just lay it down in a studio. And it's famously used on one of the first fuzz boxes. I might be talking completely nonsense now, but he definitely popularized the use of fuzz boxes, which again, ironic because he's not a fan of using pedals and doesn't really use it, but is one of the guys that really popularized it with the tone on that. But yeah, it was supposed to be horns, and then I think he like flew somewhere, and then by the time he got to the next place or something, the studio had said, yeah, good, we're releasing it. And he was like, oh shit, no, I want the horns. But it was a hit. It was a hit because it's such a great riff. And then it was covered really shortly after by like maybe Miles Davis, and he did, I'll have a look now. Can't get this.
It's kind of their first hit, I think, Satisfaction. And I know it closes all their live shows, and I've seen a few videos of that online. It looks fantastic with all the big fireworks going off, and the outro to that, they lasts ages, and it just keeps building and building.
It's superb. And but yeah, whoever covered it, and I'll find out in a second, did do it with like a horns arrangement, because that was his thing. And Keith said that version of it was kind of a lot more in his head what he was planning to go, which is kind of interesting. So it's interesting to hear that cover, because it's actually, even though a cover, much closer to the original intended idea, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I agree with you. Riff machine.
So just to jump back to the question, the coolest member of the Beatles, I've gone for George Harrison for mine.
Yeah.
So 100%. I think we've both spoke about this. He's known as the Quiet Beatle, but I think he's definitely the most improved in terms of songwriting and guitar playing. Something like Abbey Road has Here Comes the Sun and Something are the two standout tracks for that in terms of songwriting.
I would agree.
And they're both Harrison.
Something is. Yeah. I mean, my girlfriend loves that song, and it's just really good, and really good. But
it's one of the best love songs I think ever written.
He also, he wrote it for Patty Boyd, is it? And I'd also say George Harrison won in terms of like wife as well. She was nice. She was good. Smart lady. I totally agree. George Harrison was the best. And While My Guitar Gently Weeps, man. I know Clapton does the solo for it, but it's what a song that is.
Yeah, that's sort of a standout from the Y album, actually, While My Guitar Gently Weeps. I think he's got the best post-Beatles work as well. All Things Must Pass. I think it's a triple album. So a lot of the post-Beatles stuff, you had sort of Band on the Run by Paul McCartney, which is quite a good album. John Lennon had the Plastic Ono Band, as well as Imagine, which are both quite good albums. But I think All Things Must Pass, in terms of songs, it's just fantastic. It's like an hour and 45 minutes long. It's like a film, basically. But it's just absolutely fantastic. So I think that, for me, George Harrison kind of pips it. A lot of people saying he was holding back those songs for All Things Must Pass because he knew that the Beatles was imploding, so he may as well hold back the songs. You can't blame him, really.
I think towards the end, he was... I don't want to read too much in, because I don't know. Obviously, I wasn't there. But I think towards the end of it happening, he was kind of one of the most hurt by it, wasn't he? Like, I think he was kind of hurt by, like... Lennon and Yoko, and I think there was a bit of like a more of like a feeling of like, oh man, like, you know, like to it. So I think, yeah, I think you might be right. I think he might have held on to some of his good stuff because I think he was feeling a little bit more emotional about it. I saw a clip the other day with Ringo talking about the last time he saw George. And he was in his house, and he's obviously sort of like in bed, ill. And then as he left, Ringo was like, oh, you know, I love you, George, I'll see you later, blah, blah, blah. And he went, where are you going? And he went, oh, I'm off to see my daughter. Ringo obviously said that. I'm off to see my daughter somewhere. And as he went to walk out, apparently George Harrison's last words to him were, do you want me to come with you? which I think is great. I think that's great. That like, and I don't know how often people romanticize people's last words to them. You know, like I, but I even if but that's such a great last way to go out, with just being like a cheeky little smart ass. You know what I mean?
I think he was the funniest Beatle as well. If you watch a few interviews with him that he did post Beatles, he's got a great sense of humor. I think all of the Beatles did have good senses of humor, but I think he sort of stands head and shoulders above the rest.
No, I think you're right. And I think when you say that, you know, there's so many quotes from Richards, you're right, there is, but he's still, there are times where he kind of tries hard to be like, and he falls kind of like, you can tell he's kind of trying to live in that character a little bit. It doesn't come naturally. I think it's no, you know, Keith Richards, I think, is quite naturally quite shy. It's hard to say shy after 50 years of being one of the most famous men alive.
But, yeah.
But I think he got annoyed at his mum early on in his career because she said that he was quite shy, and he got annoyed that she mentioned that to the press or something. But yeah, I think you're right. I think the Beatles were all quite naturally, you know, they were Liverpool lads, and you know, I think they were quite, you know, just that working class. They had really quick witted and
very, very quick, very dry sense of humor.
Super dry, super dry. I mean, you know, there's loads of compilations of their funny moments in interviews, like the, well, how do you respond to claims that Eleanor Rigby is about a lesbian, and is it Day Trippers about a prostitute?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
McCartney's like, oh well, we were just trying to write songs about prostitutes and lesbians. And he's like, he's just like, they're so just like, fuck you. It's great.
Just obviously way smarter than the reporters.
yeah. It's great. It's no, I totally agree. They all had that. I mean, you can even hear it on like again, Get Back. Right at the start of that, you can hear Lennon as they're sound checking doing stupid versions to the actual. He's like, "Sweet Loretta fart. She thought she was a cleaner, but she was a frying pan." And it's like, just, and like, they, what track is it where they leave? You can hear, I think it's Maxwell Silverhammer on Abbey Road. You can hear McCartney laughing, and apparently it's because Lennon was mooning him while he was singing, but like, they kept it in. And so I think there was a lot, like, yeah, there's a lot of that. As much as you can, there's stories of it being kind of like maybe a bit animosity in the air towards the end. It always sounded like they never lost their sense of fun.
Yeah, I think I agree. And even though we've only seen a trailer for the Let It Be documentary that's coming out, I think later this year. But the trailer of that, you can tell that, I think they kind of knew it, this was the last album, and that's fine. But that's kind of just have a good time and just kind of mess around a bit. The sense of humor and kind of the friendship was still there, which I think is quite important.
Let It Be is kind of very on the nose, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I mean, calling the album that, you're kind of like, okay, let's call it a day, really. That kind of brings me on to a slight conclusion, I suppose. How do you think both bands, or how do you think the Rolling Stones, sorry, have aged? Can they still do it, or should they have packed it in a while ago?
So the answer to those questions are, can they still do it? Yes. Should they pack it in? No.
Yeah.
Do they look silly doing it? I totally understand why people would say yes, because... So I'm just passing the flat, make words work. I'm grabbing here. I totally would understand why people would say yes to that. But if anyone's earned the right, and I do maintain Keith Richards is still pretty cool.
Did you go and see that? You spent to go and see them live, didn't you? I want to say that 2016.
I did.
Was it a few years ago, 2016? Something like that.
Don't ask me about dates. But yeah.
Were they still good?
Yeah, superb. No, they were. It was incredible. It was incredible. And look, like I said, they were 70-year-old men. But I've seen young bands perform and don't move as much as Jagger. I mean, Jagger's still, and again, I know I keep repeating myself, does it look silly? Sure, of course it does, but like, just fucking
what else are they gonna do though? I completely agree. I think they should definitely keep going. until they die, basically. Like, what else are they going to do? Just retire and not be a Rolling Stone?
This is, to sort of tie it all kind of together to what we were just talking about, one of my favourite Keith quotes is, I think he's asking his view, are you guys still rock? And he was like, oh, the Rolling Stones can always rock, but sometimes we roll, and that's when I like it. And it, like, that can be a little bit cheesy, but what he's referring to is kind of what we've been talking about, is that rhythm, that, you know, that's what they do. And they can, as long as they can still do that live, and I promise you, I was at the stadium, oh, but this isn't video, is it? But just across from that, my window there, you can see it.
The Stratford Stadium.
This isn't video, is it?
No. It's audio, okay, so make sure you bear that in when you just point something out your window.
I was at the stadium and I was 6 foot, so I could see everything, and I was like totally jacked.
So you're on your friend's shoulders.
Yeah, and I was like totally tanned and jacked, and everyone was like, "Oh my god, you're so cool." And I was like, "Yeah, yeah." No, so that entire stadium, like when they do "Miss You," which that's a later track, "Miss You."
They
do such a funky version with Daryl on bass, and I mean, everybody on the floor, everybody was just swaying. And like, I'm on about with the same sort of like we've been to raves together. I'm the same sort of joy, and like, just like it makes you want to dance that much. Do you know what I mean? It's just like this. They're so rhythmic. It's brilliant. And so yeah. I mean, live, I think they've absolutely still got it. They're expensive as fuck, and they are old and it is silly, but I mean, if you like it, then you'll love it. That's kind of the takeaway,
I suppose, because they've had 60 years to kind of hone their skills at the live band. They know what the audience wants. They know how they can play to the audience. They can play to these stadiums. They've been doing it for 55 years, playing to these massive stadiums all around the world as well. They've got to be one of the most well-traveled bands as well, just renowned all throughout the world. I totally agree. I think they should totally keep going. So it's a weird one. They're two weird bands to compare, I think, on this measure, because the Beatles broke up. They haven't released music for 50 years. So how have they aged? I think fantastically, really. I think those songs still stand up. The album still stands up. The influence still stands up. They're kind of like an insect in amber, really, aren't they? I think one of the best things that the Beatles ever did was break up in 1970. I don't think they released a bad album. I don't think there's even a bad song there. They're kind of the perfect band for me, really. They didn't really have any missteps. They experimented a lot, but I don't think it really didn't pull off. Some worked better than others, but I don't think you could say that you could point to any era of the Beatles and kind of say that actually was really missed the mark. I don't think you can necessarily say that for the Stones, but I think that perhaps comes with the territory of being 60 years old and still doing it. You're going to make mistakes.
I've heard people, like, just purely composition wise, people say that it's so interesting the way that the Beatles did stuff, and then playing with timing, and is like, isn't Here Comes the Sun, that's like in 7 timing, it's like Indian inspired or something, isn't it?
Yeah, they had a lot of Indian influence over the music. Lots of like Within You, Without You from Sgt. Pepper is very, it's got the sitar on there, which is pretty wild for like Western music to kind of incorporate that.
Yeah, and so I've definitely heard people talk, as it, who are like, you know, actually like musical academics, I guess, on YouTube or whatever, that have said people will study Beatles music 100 years from now, kind of in a similar fashion that they would study classical music, because of how interesting the composition is. Like, I'm not sure that there's going to be such a sort of academic interest in the Stones music.
No, but I don't think that's really the point of the Stones. They're there to just jump on the stage, simple rock and roll songs. So in a way, we kind of set up this debate as Beatles versus Stones. But in a way, I don't think you can really compare them.
I don't think
it's fair to compare them.
It is. And I mean, it's interesting to hear. We're talking about this in 2021, and we're both in our 20s, so we weren't around at the time, so we see. I don't know how much of the hype was caught up in, but yeah, I know when you got, but they were friends throughout that, Beatles and Stones. Yeah. Like they swapped songs back and forth, and you know that rivalry was purely
just media.
Well, I mean, obviously, you want to sell more records than the other guy. I'm sure, like you know, you have. Once you're at that level, there's no way you're not like competitive and you know, again, after that many years, there's no way you don't have an ego. I mean, we're talking also about Jagger, do you know what I mean? So like there's yeah. obviously the need to or the desire to be number one. But yeah, I think largely they were you can catch snippets of them shitting on each other every now and again or like, you know, throwing little jibes. But I think, you know, by and large, they always were very respectful of each other's work.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I think that's quite a nice way to conclude, really. I won't keep you for too much longer. So thanks very much for coming on the podcast, special guest. We might see you on here again as well, depending on how this goes. Depends how long it takes me to edit this podcast. If it takes ages, then this will be the first and last episode. So we'll
depends
see how
long
goes.
It takes you to meet new people, Billy Nomates.
Yeah, that's a good point. I'm already running out of friends. So
he's going to recycle your Rolodex of three mates that like music.
Yeah, pretty much. Okay, so thanks very much. Have a nice evening.
No, thank you. Cheers. Yeah, I will. Thank you. Bye. Bye.
This podcast was created, written, mixed, and produced by myself. I made this podcast using nothing but free software I found online and YouTube videos. I didn't and still don't really have a clue what I'm doing, but I encourage anyone to give it a go. I think we all have a podcast in us. Just stick to your passions and you cannot go too far wrong. I'd like to thank my special guests and my friend Josh for the artwork. Thanks very much for listening. And cut.